And then someone went,
testing, 1, 2.
I can really taste the bacteria.
What's up, John? What's up, John Burton?
1, 2, 3, 4. Why you can't have a best?
Okay, wait. Let me rewind. John, you're right.
Right. I'm just going to play us in a little bit.
When are you going to tell me we're starting?
We started.
Okay. Awesome.
I just podcast it.
Yeah, that's I think I didn't know more people. Well, so I did this thing called the Lift It Project. You heard about that?
No.
Okay. It's basically like a We Are the World, but for the Hudson Valley.
Oh, cool.
It's a crazy thing. I picked like, because this show is like half musicians and half everything else.
Yeah.
So I get like 50 musicians, singers.
Yeah.
I say, all right, you got to show up. We're going to sing as a choir, but you don't get to rehearse.
Yeah.
And it's a song I wrote.
So wow.
And we picked like 4 nonprofit partners.
Oh, that's so cool. Pick Mizzentop. We've got some cool musicians there.
Oh, really?
Yeah, at the school. Yeah.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
I was kidding. That's on my list of stuff to ask.
Okay, cool.
So they don't get to rehearse. And, wait, where was I going with that? Why am I so confused?
Because that's all right.
My daughter's going to
college. Your daughter's going to college.
I'm a wreck, man. Okay, Lift It Project. Not practicing.
Yeah.
And then not preparing.
Yeah.
And then radio. There it goes. I got it back.
There you go. You did it.
We did it, and we sold out a theater, and we sold out the airport.
Oh, that's so cool.
So, yeah, it was really cool. So, and we do the song, and the song... So I get a call like, hey, today from like between 8 and 9 on a radio station on here, we're going to play the song that you did. So I'm like, oh, that'd be cool to listen to. So I go online. I couldn't do it. I lasted like 7 minutes. It's Traffic Weather Song from the 70s. Traffic Weather Song from the 70s. And I'm like, how do people like?
No, I don't know. I don't know how they do it.
Yeah.
Well, also TV, right? Like, my kids, we were traveling. My oldest is 9. My youngest is younger than that, 2, 3. And then I got a 7-year-old. And
oh, wow.
We it's all Netflix and on demand, right? And we were traveling, and they had to watch actual TV or cable. And a commercial came on, and they were so confused. They were like, Dad,
what is that?
What is this? Can you fast forward? And I was like, no, you don't understand. Like, you can't fast forward. You can't skip it. This is what's happening on the television. And they couldn't understand what was happening.
Oh, wow.
Everything's just on demand, right? Yeah. And so, like, even when I'm listening to podcasts on Spotify and there's ads, I get to skip them.
Yeah.
And it's, well, my favorite podcaster is Dax Shepard.
Really?
Yeah. So he... Because he interviews, so he's got 2 different, he's on Mondays, it's celebrities of some sort, like, you know, Shaq O'Neal was just on. And then on Thursdays, he's got experts of something. Mm-hmm. So his podcast is called Armchair Expert because he thinks he knows everything. That's kind of his thing, right? And then he'll get like some super well-known psychologist who talks about, I don't know, trauma or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then he gets put in his place a little bit. But he's also like very thoughtful about the questions that he asks.
Right.
And then with his celebrity friends, it's just kind of like banter. And he gets them to talk about stuff that they wouldn't talk about at any other show. It's very cool. It's very long form. And then there's a lot of banter at the end. And I can like kind of mindlessly listen to it.
Right.
And then every now and then there's like a nugget that I'm like, oh yeah, let's dig into that.
Yeah, I like him. I like that. You listen to Rogan?
I don't listen to Rogan. I watch him on YouTube. I was more into him before, but now it's pretty repetitive.
Yeah.
And it's like, all right, dude, you have the same guys on, and I don't know. It's like It's same thing with Dax Shepard. I liked him a lot more in the beginning.
Right.
Once you do 1,000 episodes, there's only so much you can like.
Right.
There's only so much content you can come up with at right. the end. So, but I mean, Rogan's the OG, right? Like he was the guy who started the whole thing.
Yeah. He was definitely one of them. I'm with Rogan. Like I listen to him to learn.
Yeah.
And, but I can almost pick the story he's going to tell before.
That's right. It's like, yeah, once you listen to these guys, you get to know them so well, right? And then you're just like, I know what you're about to talk about. You're about to talk about this thing, that thing, the other thing. And yeah, it gets boring after a while. But like, you know, I'll dip back in a year.
That's the move.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he'll be talking about something else.
Yeah.
Great.
All right. Mizzen Top.
Mizzen Top Day of School.
Tell me, what is it?
Okay. Here's the long and the short of it.
Sorry, I should hold it
closer. Oh, yeah.
No, you're good.
Mizzen Top is an unusual school. I've worked at a few different schools. This one is unusual in that it's a private school in the Hudson Valley that does not that turns out kids that are academically incredibly well prepared for the next stage of their career, but it's not elitist in there. It's an elite school. It's not elitist. And I think it just has this...
how do you make that happen?
I think it was very organic. So it's a young school that was started in 1998. So it doesn't have 100 years of history, right? It doesn't have the sort of old... I don't know. It's like it sprung out of a local Pauling person's mind who was just Lisa Daniels was looking for an alternative to some of these bigger, more expensive schools. And she was like, you know what, I'm going to start my own school. And it was a tiny little, you know, kindergarten basically in a church. And I guess it struck a chord with people. It was non-religious, non-political. It was just like a great place to send your kid. And over the course of several years, it grew and they moved into this building that we now currently own, but we were renting it for a couple of decades. And it just has this like startup quality, which is what attracted me to it. So I started a business several years ago, a hard cider business. I'm obsessed with hard cider and I got so obsessed with it that I was like, you know, I got to start my own, but this is like getting, my basement is just a cider mill.
Really?
And I was just so obsessed. So I went and raised money for
it. What about hard cider obsessed you?
Well, okay. The Hudson Valley is a very cool place for apples.
Yeah.
So New York is the biggest producer of apples, but it's also got these really cool old farms with very unusual varieties of apples, some of which were planted 150 years ago, that are not edible apples. They're more like crab apples, but they're great for cider. So like they have a lot more flavor. There's less sugar, but a lot more tannins, a lot more acid, like exceptionally good for cider making. Just like you wouldn't make wine with table grapes. With a good hard cider, you want to use proper apples. And so we called ourselves Abandoned Hard Cider because we were going to abandon orchards all over Hudson Valley and just asking the landowners, hey, can I use your apples and we'll give you some cider in return? We made this incredible batches of cider. And then, you know, from there, I just got obsessed, raised a bunch of money because I am a fundraiser. And we built this really cool company. Anyway, I sold it a year ago. I have,
Congrats.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Big time. Okay. It was, I wanted to, I have three children and I had zero children when I started the company. And the company just was like, it was another child. Yeah. I can't have four kids. That's too ridiculous. So I sold it.
One at this point.
Yeah. It's one is enough. Three is great. Four was too much. So I sold it and I went back to nonprofits, which is how I ended up eventually at Mizzen Top. But I do like the startup quality of, you know, any organization that's like building something kind of from scratch. I'm attracted to it. So that's what attracted me to Mizzen Top. Now it's, you know, it's 26 years old, so it's had, it's proven itself, but it's still nimble. It's still building. It's still doing really exciting things, piloting new programs. It's got this like dynamism that I don't feel at other schools. And you can see it in the kids. The kids are, you know, my first time there when I was interviewing for the job, they were just, there was something about these kids and about the teachers too. It was a spark that I hadn't seen in other schools. It wasn't dry. It wasn't boring. The kids were excited to be there. The teachers were excited to be there, which says a lot because, you know, teachers, your wife's a teacher. It can be hard. It can be really hard. And of course, it can be hard at Mizzentop too. But I mean, these teachers want to be, there's teachers that.
Private school is a whole different gig for teachers.
Yes, yes. No. But what they do have is a direct line to every single parent who wants to chat with them about their child, right? So like you've got teachers that are fielding questions at night on text with parents at all hours of the day. And that's part of the job, right? Like if you're sending your kid to a private school, I think that comes with the territory. We're all very invested. I go to some of the parents' houses sometimes just to hang out. Like, it's a community. So it is hard. But, yeah, it's probably different from public school. I imagine. I mean, there's bigger class sizes. Yeah. How many kids?
Like, she's, like, anywhere from 18 to 22.
Okay, yeah. Yeah. So the most at Mizzentop. The absolute most is 17, but that's rare. It's usually sort of like 10, 12. So you got fewer kids to deal with. Yeah. 24 is a lot.
24 is a lot. But, but in a 24 classroom, there's a teacher's aid.
Yeah. So right.
You got that support. And then, you know, I mean, the biggest thing is like the union support. Like that's, I've always wondered if there's a way to unionize private school, because let me start back a little bit. I have this theory that in like 10 years, school's going to end at like sixth or eighth grade anyway.
Really?
Yeah. My theory is there's no need to know anything.
Yeah. Tell me about that. That's really interesting. I mean, that's a hot topic right now.
Yeah.
Right. Like what's going to happen to schools?
What, there's no point in knowing anything anymore. Like you don't need to remember anything.
Yeah.
Right. So teaching and like complex math you don't need to do anymore.
Because
it's done for you.
Yeah. Because of AI basically,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. The only real thing, so like, you know, if I can ask my computer when George Washington died.
Yeah.
Right. I don't need to memorize. So so our whole framework of thinking is going to change. I do need to be able to read.
Yeah.
And I do need to be able to speak, to interact with AI. But past that, like, what's the point of me knowing calculus?
Yeah.
It's kind of not, right?
Well, here's how I think about it. So I could go to the gym. Or I could watch YouTube videos about how to go to the gym and like what exercises to do. I'll know how to do it, but my body won't know how to do it, right? Like my body won't be going to the gym, using its muscles, building the muscles. And so I think that AI and the internet is sort of like giving us the information to then use. And school is where you actually use and practice that and build the neural pathways in your brain, right? And like one of the things at home, my wife is really not into AI and I'm really into it. And one of her concerns is, all right, so you've got AI. It can do everything for you. Now, what about your brain? Like you are not using your brain in the same way that we've been doing for several hundred years. You're not building those neural pathways. You're not building your muscle, your brain muscle, your thinking muscle, if you're just relying on AI. And I agree with that. And so actually, Mizzentop agrees with that. What we're doing is we're building a new innovation hub, which essentially is We are seeing that AI is the future. I mean, it's the present. It's here. Now we got to teach kids how to use that and leverage that in order to build their creativity, build their thinking skills, build their mechanical skills. I mean, we cannot begin to imagine what the workforce is going to look like when our kindergartners are entering the workforce, right? Yeah. But we have to start trying to envision it, and we have to start helping them understand AI is going to be very much a part of your job, whether you're a plumber, a mechanic, a thought leader, a president, whatever it is that you are going to do. It's, I mean, could be, right?
Yeah.
Or the vice president. I mean, who knows, right? We can't imagine it. I was just reading, I was watching, what's his name? The guy, the chief of OpenAI who developed Chat, Sam Altman. Okay, that dude yesterday was like, he was asked in an interview, what do you think 10 years down the line AI is going to, what will have changed? And he said, you're asking, that's ages away. What you're asking me to envision is impossible because of how quickly things, I mean, if you would imagine 10 years ago, tried to imagine what life would be like now, you would have missed the mark. You could not possibly understand what AI is capable of doing. And we cannot possibly understand what AI will be capable of in 10 years. But in schools, we have to try, because it's our job to prepare kids for the future. And if we're not using AI and teaching kids how to leverage it, we're missing out on a huge opportunity. Not an opportunity. It's like, it's almost a mandate. Like, right. You have to prepare these kids.
Right. And I think like the most important part of school going forward, because like to your wife's argument that like, you know, what happens to your brain, and maybe you don't have to think like that anymore. Like, why is that good? Like maybe it's better for your brain to just create all that. I make the argument that it probably is.
Yeah.
And it's not like you're not going to have to problem solve. You're still going to have to problem solve. So you're developing that. But in terms of like the old, which is why private schools are so important, in terms of the old modality of, you know, regurgitating information that you're never going to use again, I'm kind of happy to see that go.
Yeah.
But, so I don't necessarily know that it's better for us to have that muscle. Cause I think now we're going to have to rely more on creating, which I think
that's right.
Which is, to me, a better muscle anyway.
I think you're right. I think that's absolutely... Well, that's the cool thing about private schools versus public schools. Public schools are big lumbering giants. They got to get state approval for curriculum, blah, blah, blah.
The test.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Private schools don't have to do that. So if we say today, you know what? We see up on the horizon that creativity is going to be the number one asset for any human being on the planet. We got to shift, right? Yeah. We can teach to that. And we can, I mean, we're not going to throw out the old stuff, but we definitely want to infuse the, you know, the old curriculum with some of the newer stuff. And we have the freedom to do that. And also we listen to our parents, right? We're not listening to the state. We're listening to our parents. What are your needs? What are your children's needs? What do you see as the future? So like on our board, we have a bunch of AI people. We have a bunch of business people. We have a bunch of regular people.
No podcasters?
Great question. Great question. I wish I knew. If we do have a parent who's a podcaster, I want to know about it.
Get on there.
We have musicians. Yeah, that's great. We have a good mix.
The other thing that I think private school does better, that I think is like going to increase in importance, is community. Okay, the word that you use.
That's my wife. Hold on.
Yeah, go for it.
It's a joke on the show that she always calls
me. You're on hold from here. How can I help you?
Dog is yelling.
Oh, thank you. I'm doing all right. We're Martin.
Hey, he's a wreck, but he's handling it pretty well. Oh, that's good.
Martin's the director of development at a private school. This was the show you were supposed to be doing with me.
All good.
Yeah, we're busy. No, I'm okay. I'll call you when we get out. All right, love you. Bye.
Oh, that's nice of Trish to check in on you. Where's your daughter going? What school?
Coastal Carolina.
Oh, she's way down there.
Yeah, and dude, it. So, me and my daughter are like unusually close, but it's because we've had like crazy circumstances. Like, I got like really mentally ill and was suicidal. And
oh, wow.
Was facing like 350 years in jail.
Oh, damn.
And, yeah, and.
Do your listeners know about this?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, man. I want to hear about that.
So like 12 years ago, I was going crazy anyway, right? Then I get arrested, 52 felony. I'm here, so it worked out.
Yeah.
But the stress of facing 350 years in the jail.
Right? Yeah.
So I'm like, I'm not putting my family through that. And now I'm in the system. And when you're in the system, mental health practitioners, if there are any, don't speak to each other. Someone's giving me a pill for this, one's giving me a pill for this.
And I'm right.
Like, they're all counterindicating. Because nobody knows, nobody's looking at all the pills. One of the pills they gave me was lithium. And turns out I'm lithium toxic. So yeah, so the pill I'm taking to not kill myself is actually killing me. And so I say, okay, I can't put my family through this. I can't. There's no point. Then I didn't see for you. So I'm like, I'm going to take my own life, but I'm going to wait till my daughter's, this happened in Spain. So I'm going to wait till my daughter goes back to school in the fall so that there's a system.
Wow. That was considerate of you.
Well, yeah. And I'm also going to get rid of these drugs because I don't want people to blame it on the drug.
Right?
I want people to know this is my call.
Sounds like you were thinking pretty clearly actually at this time.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
So I detox, but I get announced to my world, I'm going to go off the drugs. And they're all like, you're crazy. And I'm like, yes, but I'm still getting off the drugs, right?
Yeah.
So I went cold turkey off of everything. Even my medical doctor was like,
whoa. Yeah,
I was in a different towel every 15 minutes. Oh my God. And the one person who hung with me was my daughter.
Wow.
Like, my wife, like, would circled. But I went to a house by myself to do it, and she come and visit. But my daughter actually lived with me, and she was 7 at the time.
Whoa.
She would make my peanut butter sandwiches. She would walk me around outside to get sun. She would make up stories to tell me because she knew I wouldn't interrupt her.
Wow.
At the inside. She would call my friends and say, why aren't you visiting him? She basically, like, ran my life.
She was 7?
7. Oh. It was insane. And, so I get to the end of it. It's 2 days before I'm going to do it. I go down to the water. I lived on like a lake. And I go down to the water. And some voice, I don't know. I don't think it was a thought. It was a voice somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Says, if you do this, the only thing your daughter's going to learn is that anything she loves is lost.
Mm.
You can't do that. That's a curse.
Wow.
So okay, now I have to live. So, I rebuilt my life. So we get it, but that's, so we bought it there, right? Then, 4 years ago, my wife gets this head and neck cancer thing.
Oh my God.
It was hard. They cut her head off.
Oh my God.
Everything was so radical. Like Newsweek covered it, Today Show covered it. It was crazy. They cut her from here, all like literally cut her head off. And took out lymph nodes and chemo and radiation and her face burning. And it was just horrible. And so it was like really like a 2-year timeout for my whole family to take care of her. And,
yeah.
You know, we just sat in one room and fed her and did that for, for forever.
Was this before COVID?
This was during COVID.
Oh my God.
Even worse.
Oh my God.
And so, yeah. And so my daughter, so. Like we've been through some extreme, through extreme circumstances. You have like a different relationship. So, she told me she's going to Coastal Carolina, and I just ignored it for forever. but we leave Thursday, and I'm like, I don't know what to do.
I get it.
And then
I get it.
Yeah, yeah. And you're gonna go through that 3 times.
Yeah, well, college is still a thing. That's right. Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I'm my two sons. I don't know. Girls are. I knew a daughter was going to be different. She's my youngest. My two sons. Maybe I'll be bawling. I don't know, but they're like, you know, they're sons. I know what it's like to be a boy, but like, she's my little baby. She's my baby girl. And I think she'll probably be my baby girl when she is college age. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't have some, we only have the one.
Yeah.
But, I tell the story that this is minor league ball player. I think he played for the Cardinals, but I might be making that up. He's 17 years in the minors, right? And Cardinals will have a crappy season anyway, so they call him up and what's taking out that in the majors before he, because you know he's gonna not gonna last that much longer, 17 years. So gets up, gets a pitch, boom, home run.
Whoa.
Runs the bases, drops the bat, never touches the bat again.
Whoa.
Right? So I'm like that way with kids.
Yeah.
I got that beautiful stuff like that up. So it's in the-
that's great. Hey, one is plenty.
Yeah. Threes.
Yeah, I don't know if I'd recommend it. I mean, my wife and I wanted three and we got three, and it is about seven times harder than one.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense.
But it's also seven times, like the good times are seven times better, right? Like, you know, I get these like beautiful summer scenes where like, you know, the girl is in the splash pool and the boys are on the trampoline and then they're sword fighting and there's a puppy running around, like it's like idyllic, right? It's idyllic, but then they're all screaming and biting each other when it's bedtime, right? So there's that too.
Screaming and biting.
Yeah, there's a lot of biting going on. They'll aggro that. Yeah. So anyway, I mean,
do you think they're gonna go to college?
Yeah, I don't know. Even my oldest, I took a year off between high school and college.
You did the gap.
I did the gap.
Everybody should do a gap.
I am telling my sons already now, like, that was the best decision I ever made. Cause you don't know what you want to do when you're 18. You shouldn't just like launch right into it. But, I also see like how competitive, at least now, it is to get into the college that you want to get into. And I wanted to get into very specific colleges. And, but that gap year actually helped me because my resume at that point, my cover letter, it was richer, right? It was like, I wasn't just an academic. I was also somebody who had lived in the world and earned money. I understood what money was like for.
Right.
And, how hard it was to earn. So
did you go up around here?
Well, I was born in New York City, but I actually lived in Norway, the country, from the time I was 10. Yeah. Yeah, I have a Euro quality to me. But Norway is a great country, but it's, you know, talking about startup culture, there's it's a small country, takes very well care of its citizens. And the drive to create is lacking there. Whereas here, anywhere you go in this country, you're going to find people starting stuff. And I admire that and I do it myself and I like it, which again is why Mizzentop was so attractive to me. It was like, I could see the startupness of it. Right. And like the entrepreneurialism, just even in like curriculum creation. But yeah, I mean, is college going to be a thing? I mean, it's a good question. It like 4 years ago or 3 years ago, I would have said, absolutely. Of course it's going to like, everybody's still going to go to college. But now with AI, I really don't know. But I do know that like, people need to learn. People want to learn.
Yes.
Right. Like even Joe Rogan, right? People tune in because they want to know stuff. They want to educate themselves on stuff. And maybe that's not the, like, you're getting sort of like the sugary bits and not the, like, the meat of the thing. But people are so curious, like, as humans.
It's so funny. Like I listen to Rogan, but, and he's very curious and he deals with intellectual topics. But my argument for college is that forget what you learn. It teaches you how to think.
Yeah.
And you can tell that he's super smart.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, but he hasn't been trained to think.
That's right.
So like, like one of the most valuable courses I took in college was statistics, because it teaches you, you know, if two things are true, if two things are true and you're not seeing all 10 and the other 8 are false, maybe what you're thinking about isn't true.
Yeah.
But, and you, it teaches you critical thinking.
100%.
And you can tell even with Roving that the critical thinking part, because he went to like college for like a year.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not quite there. No. Well, that's the thing that annoys me about him a little bit, is that he, like, if you disagree with him strongly on a topic that he cares about, you know, he's not going to have you on the show. I wish he did that more, but anyway, I mean, yeah, the critical thinking,
but where are you going to learn that? You still need school. I'm arguing against my first point. you still need school for that. You need school from, like, just because AI tells you something doesn't make it true either.
That's right.
So,
well, and then, like, when I started college, Wikipedia was the big bad no-no. Like, all our professors told us, do not cite Wikipedia. Wikipedia's, you know, it's not peer reviewed, blah, blah, blah. And then eventually, that became sort of like totally fine. You can use Wikipedia. And now AI is the new sort of like, do not use it. Or if you're going to use it, you need to explain how you used it, blah, blah, blah. I think it'll be institutionalized at some point where, you know, you can't ignore AI. AI is being used by students all over the country. How it's being used, I think, is important. And, well, we luckily, you know, I don't know that we do, but we have talked about it. We have talked about it. The thing is that we go through pre-K through 8th.
Around 8th.
Around 8th, yeah. So we have been thinking a lot about how are we going to not have it used? How are we going to detect whether it's used surreptitiously? And how do we want to use it as educators? And it's still an open question. Like, so I've reached out to IBM. We have a lot of IBM.
That makes sense, yeah.
People who work at IBM who send their kids to us. And I've reached out to them, and they've been very helpful. A lot of people at IBM have helped guide us in thinking about, because they're super into AI. They do a lot of AI stuff. And they're helping us think through, like, what should our curriculum look like? What should our AI fluency curriculum look like? And how can we anticipate what next year is going to look like in terms of AI, or, you know, 2 years down the road? So that's been really helpful. But then, you know, like, every school is doing it differently. Some schools just absolutely want nothing to do with AI, and other schools are all in.
Yeah.
Right. And I think both of those approaches are, dangerous and risky. So I think a thoughtful AI approach is the way to go, which is what we're doing. But
maybe with cell phones in schools.
No cell phones. No cell phones in school. In public schools, yeah. We've been, well, I think phones, flip phones, fine. But you don't need a smartphone. Like, my kids don't have neither. But once they get to a certain age, I want to call you. Or maybe they get, you know, an Apple Watch or something like that. Right. But I don't want you to go, you know what people do on phones? What young boys are going to do on their phone, on their smartphone? I don't want that. Like, on demand?
Well, see, my thing, okay, so I understand no phone thing academically. Like, I get it. The first time your kid is in a school that's closed for a shooting drill,
yeah,
you want the smartest phone in their hand that you could possibly get. And then, so I'm like, it's to me, it's a safety issue. And like, my daughter went through it at school. They shut the school down. And I'm like, man, if I couldn't get a hold of her,
yeah,
I'm going through the front door of the school, and you as would you. So like, so how do you adjust that? And then two, like, and my second point is, like, when you get out of school, the phone is the tool.
Yeah.
Right. So,
yeah.
So it's like trying to teach kids to build a house, but not letting them bring a hammer.
Right.
Even eighth grade, when you graduate eighth grade, your whole world is your phone. If I haven't learned how to use it, then.
Yeah.
So.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know where, well,
Yeah. I mean, I have a hard time with the phone. I know how addictive it is. And then I also, I don't know if you read this book by Jonathan Haidt. He, The Anxious Generation.
Yes.
Yeah, basically what he's saying is like, suicide rates and rates of depression and anxiety skyrocketed starting in 2010. And the correlation or the causality of it was smartphones, right? And so we're losing a lot of kids to the anxiety that's produced by social media specifically. And he talks about, like, it's not just social media or smartphones. It was actually, like, bits of the technology. The front-facing phone, the front-facing camera was actually the catalyst. So once you could start taking selfies, posting it, getting ripped apart, that was the thing, right? So we have that. This is why, like, AI, it's not just a technology. It is potentially a game-changing, like, aspect of human life. So we have to be so careful. So my counter argument to the, you know, the school shooting thing is we're losing a lot more kids to suicide than we are to, and I don't know if this is true, so don't, you know, you're going to have to fact check me on this, but we're losing more kids to mental health problems caused by the phone or triggered by the phone than school shootings. And so we have to weigh both of those, I think. Yeah.
We deal with the mental health issue.
Oh, sure. Yeah, we can do that too. Yeah.
No, but, you know, because I've heard that argument, and I'm always going back, like, well, it doesn't have to be either or.
That's right.
It should be dealing with mental health issues anyway.
100%.
And so, I've heard that argument about in the dopamine and
yeah.
addiction and yeah. stuff like that. And I had my daughters in this, like, friend group. And so, they came in to do the show for graduation to talk about, like, what the world was going to be like.
Yeah.
And we looked at screen time. And
yeah.
They're like 8 hours.
Oh.
I mean.
I am too, though.
Yeah. Yeah, but you're doing it for work, too, though, right?
I am doing a lot for work. But if I'm really honest with myself, it's not all for work. And it is remarkable how much time I spend on that thing, and I don't even know it. You know what? Another thing that you can see is pickups. So the number of times that you've picked up your phone throughout the day.
Right.
How many times do you think you've picked up your phone today? Whoa. And opened it and done something on it?
So far?
Mm-hmm.
It's 9:45. Well, okay, so I use Waze to get here because I'm...
Sure, sure. I do too. Yeah, third. Yeah, that's probably right. Oh, is it? Okay. So for me, I thought maybe throughout the course of the day, I probably picked up my phone maybe 40 times. Turned out it was 150, and I had no idea. And I don't even know what I'm doing on that thing. I'm not making phone calls. You could remove the calling app on this thing and I wouldn't notice it. Like, I'm not using it as a phone, right? This is a whole different thing. Anyway, I don't have the answer. Mizzentop doesn't allow phones in the classrooms or at school, but I do see the kids take it out of their backpack when they're on their way home. And at that point, it's out of our, you know, but they have it on them. I'm sure they have it shut off, and it's one of those conversations that's like, we have to be so thoughtful about it, because you're right, if something were to happen out of school, what do you do? But I'm also right, or Jonathan Haidt is right, like, it's actually killing a lot of kids too.
My other point about that, like, people say, like, you know, it's bad and more, it influences connection and community. I'm like, or is that what we really want? Like, I remember when we went through COVID and everything was said, thank God for cell phones during COVID, by the way.
Oh, 100%.
My daughter went to school on a cell phone for a year.
Dude.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So another thing to consider. But,
true.
But, you know, part of my stance on it is, I think, is like, well, maybe that's just when we went through COVID and we went to a lockdown, and then when things opened back up again, half the people I knew were like, I liked it better when we were locked down.
Mm.
Like, you know, not.
I know those people too. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm not, maybe we use this so much, not because it's bad, but it's because we, what we want. Maybe we just really like it.
Yes. Well, I always think about this. For however many thousands of years, our species has lived in small little groups, little tribal groups of 100, and we've got grandparents and uncles and aunts.
Your daughter should never go to college. Continue.
And we've just lived in these like communities, right? These small communities. And it's crazy that over the course of like maybe 300-400 years, we've evolved away from that to the point where we're more comfortable being on a screen in our room alone, isolated from the world, but like connected to the world wide web of people. That somehow to me feels unnatural. And, but it is the reality, right? We don't live in those tribal communities. I have to drive a ways to get to my siblings. And like, we don't have aunts and uncles helping us raise the kids. It's not like that anymore.
But something to think about is, were we in those tribal communities because we had
to? Sure, sure, yeah.
Now we don't have, and now everybody's got a grocery store.
It's a good point.
So, you know, maybe, who's to say which side of that was natural?
Like, yeah.
Maybe it's more natural this way.
You're right.
Because we have, you know, when we were tribal, we didn't have another option. Now we have another option. So, and people are picking the other options. So they're like, well, maybe that, you know, like this. It's a weird thing to say, but like maybe that tribal thing was because you needed to make a circle when the wolves came.
Yeah.
But now you don't.
That's a really good point. I haven't thought about that. The only way that I've thought about it is like our brains evolved under those conditions. And so that's like that's our impulses to do that. But you're right. You're absolutely right. Like maybe that was just the default because there was like a saber-toothed tiger out there. Yeah.
Right. And that's my institution of marriage.
Yeah.
Same thing. I needed to keep you on the farm.
Interesting.
I needed to keep you on the farm to give me kids because I need labor.
Totally.
And so I make up this institution where you're actually going to hell.
Yes. Yeah.
If you don't give me labor.
Right.
And so.
Good point. Yeah. I like your, Rogan should have you on. I like it.
But yeah. And so now we have to like this choice. And everybody seems to be choosing the phone. So
it's true.
And my other perspective on it is, since when have we ever done anything we didn't want to do?
Mm-hmm.
Like, people never do anything. Like, it's not like I don't want to use this, but I have to.
That is the argument about the dopamine, right? So the argument goes that humans, given access to the things that light up their dopamine, are going to, right, sugar, drugs, alcohol, whatever it is, like if you have full access to all those things, your brain cannot help itself, especially those who are especially prone to addiction, and you're going to go. That's where you're going to go. Go for it.
Okay, watch this.
Yeah.
My family always calls during shows. Welcome, you're on Home From Here. How can I help you?
I'm sorry. I'm outside your door. It's locked. I can't get through. You grab on the phone. I texted. Oh, here she is. Never mind.
Bye. Was that Trish? Oh, your sister. Okay. Yeah, it's a good conversation to have. It's interesting because that phone, you know, I tried to have a flip phone a couple of years ago, and I'm powerless against this stupid smartphone, and it's ruining my life. Blah blah blah. I'm not like looking at my kids. I'm looking at whatever. And then I got the flip phone, and I realized it was so awful. I can't GPS. I can't. I can't take photos. I can't do like a million things that I like to do. I can't do WhatsApp. So like calling overseas was a big hassle. The whole thing was a hassle, and I ended up with this like mini iPad in my pocket and a flip phone instead of just the smartphone. So it's the utility of it is insane.
Yeah, and it's almost impossible See, I think it would be more isolating for a kid to not have a phone at that point than to have one.
Interesting.
It's impossible to stay culturally relevant.
Yeah, you can't.
Right?
Yeah, you're going to lose out on the like social capital.
Yeah.
If you don't have it.
Yeah. So that's why Governor Hochul, of whom I'm a huge fan.
Yeah.
Let's rethink the limited usage maybe.
Yeah.
Or something where.
Huh.
Because I think, yeah.
I don't know that that's even been a topic at Mizzentop Day School. I think, and I don't know how long, because I've been there for 2 years. I don't know how long that ban has been in place, but it hasn't been a topic of conversation as far as I know.
Well, I bet the flip side of my argument is, I bet at schools like Mizzentop where the phone is banned, the actual school experience is more intense.
Yes.
In terms of you know, community.
Yeah.
And actually, the muscle of focus.
That's right.
Probably 100%. Way more developed in a private school where you can't touch phone all day.
Yeah. Yeah. I sit with the kids at lunch, just to hang out with them, and they are well spoken. They look you in the eye. They engage. And I love it. Yeah, their social skills are probably higher than those of kids who've just like, they go to the cafeteria and they're on their phone. For sure. Yeah.
Oh, if you like my daughter, like she has friends over. She has like these two friends in high school. They would sleep over like all the time. They just were thinking they'd all sleep in the same bed and it was hilarious. So I go in her room and they're not talking. They're all on a phone. I'm like, why are you in the same room if you?
Yeah.
But so. There's that too.
That's really funny.
Yeah. No, it's true.
Oh man.
Amazing. And then, and when I have all the friends in here and we check the screen time thing, that was really kind of.
Yeah.
Like 8 hours. 8 hours was the lowest.
Yeah. That's, and you wonder like, what are they doing on there?
Yeah.
But 8 hours goes by quick when you're like, just like soaking up, you know, what so-and-so is doing on Instagram or Snap. I don't even know what apps they're using these days, but yeah.
But you know what's funny now though? Like I noticed like the last half of her senior year, she wasn't on the phone as much.
Mm.
So
yeah.
I wonder if at some point, like anything else, you burn out on it.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah. I'm sure. Yeah. Why not? I mean, I'm
find out how many times.
Okay. Yeah. So you go to, let's see, you go to settings.
Let's just see how addicted I am.
Yeah, I'm curious to see. Okay, so you go to settings and then you go to screen time.
Do I even have that?
Yeah. You've got an Apple phone? Yeah. So it's settings and then you go all the way down here to screen time and then you go to
So my daily average is 6 hours and 17 minutes.
Well, sure. See all. No, you don't want to do that. Downtime. All right, let me see where it is on mine. It's somewhere in there.
Well, even knowing my screen time is amazing, but that's not accurate because I drive like 45 minutes each way, so I got an hour and a half where it's just waiting.
Yep.
So that puts me down to 4.5, and then
yeah,
well, I watch it in bed.
Yes.
So that's. Absolutely no good, but that's crazy.
Yeah, it's somewhere in there. I just don't know where it is.
Knowing my screen time is awesome. Should I feel good about 6 hours?
Is that your average?
Yeah.
Yeah, mine is 6 hours and 42 minutes. Just... Yeah, but it also shows, okay, so most used for me by far is YouTube. And I use YouTube for everything. Like if I'm doing a project, but you know what? Here's a crazy thing. So I like to build. I like to create. I like to do stuff. And so YouTube is my friend. Like, you know, how do you build a deck? Or how do you, you know, make hinges out of scrap metal? Whatever. But now I've been using ChatGPT, which is like, not only will it give me the step-by-step, but it will give me the visuals and it will give me really cool creative ideas that no human has come up with before. And sometimes it's better. That's the crazy thing about AI, which, you know, we should be teaching that. Like, how do you leverage AI to create something new
And that's never been done before. That's what Sam Altman was talking about yesterday. He was like, when I was a kid and I wanted to make a game, I would go on this like ancient, huge calculator and I would program it in such a way that I could create like this super like low tech game. And now he wanted to try out the newest version of ChatGPT 5. And he was like, I wonder if I could do that. And he had to do it. And within a couple prompts and a few minutes, he had this excellent, insane game that was better than what he had envisioned. And that, like, if a young kid wanted to sell that on the App Store, probably could. And that's insane, right?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah. And I did work for the Oral Cancer Awareness Foundation. And we wanted to hand out these USB sticks,
yeah,
right? Because it has a band, a musical band that must come by. So we want to put the music on the USB stick and hand it out.
Oh, that's nice.
So then I'm like, all right, well, then we should put something about the foundation on and blah, blah, blah. I go to ChatGPT, wrote the whole thing.
Yeah.
Lots of ideas I didn't think about.
Yep.
Then coded it for me.
Right, right.
So I have a code. All I have, I'm like, that's insane. 4 minutes, maybe?
Yep. That's yep. Insane. Well, so at our Innovation Hub initially, last year when we envisioned it, it's this big, beautiful, center for learning, right? And we thought coding, we're going to teach coding, which we do. We already do, but we were going to really make that kind of a centerpiece. And then we started realizing there's going to be no coders. Like, they're already firing coders. It's not necessary anymore. So it's like an ancient, you know, obsolete art form.
Yeah.
And so, like, all right, we got to rethink that then. Like, that's where AI started to really become apparent. Like, we need to be teaching AI.
Right.
How to use it.
The artists. That's the, like,
yeah.
Public school art makes me insane.
Mm.
To me, especially now with AI, the last people standing with jobs are going to be people who make things.
Right? Yeah. Right.
And like, I don't understand for the life of me how music, for example, case closed. We already know that music helps you with math, music, and I argue that it helps. My argument about music is, especially in school, it's hubris to think that we have a word for everything that we feel.
Mm-hmm.
We don't.
Mm.
And even your and my word it means different things. Right? You could say, I'm glad to be here. I could say, I'm glad to be here.
Mm.
And my glad to be here is because this is my job and I get to feed my family. And then your glad to be here is I get to do my job and promote Mizzen Top.
Yeah.
But it means completely different thing. Same word, right?
Yeah.
What music does, and this is why it's so important in schools and why it makes me crazy that public schools, it's like one time a week.
Yeah.
What music does is it allows you to express, it's a spectrum, right? So glad is a spectrum. It allows you to pinpoint exactly where on that spectrum you are.
Oh, interesting.
And the same note to me lets me pinpoint exactly, like we hear a sad song, right?
Yeah.
It's sad to you for a different reason than
it's
sad to me, but we're both in our sad spectrum.
Yes.
It nails it for you, it nails it for me, but it's different.
Yeah.
So it gives you 30 million other words that are much more accurate.
Interesting.
Than sad. Now, how important is it for a teenager to be able to express themselves and not be limited to just blah, blah? That makes me nuts that public schools can't drill.
That's interesting. Yeah. I don't know. I can't speak to that because I went to public school in Norway, which is very different. We didn't have I don't know if we had any music, honestly, but Mizzen Top is cool because so unlike many other schools, it does not have a huge athletic field. It has an athletic field and it has a gym, but it's not like people don't go to Mizzen Top because of its athletic, whatever programs, but people do come to Mizzen Top for the performing arts and that's cool. So that's kind of where we excel. If I'd pick one thing, sort of non-academic, that would be it. Excellent actors. I mean, some of the school plays are just insanely good. They go down to Broadway, they and young kids, right? It's cool. And we had this one guy, I won't name him, I don't want to embarrass him, but he's just a phenomenal piano player. And he graduated last year, and he, at the graduation ceremony, he played the piano and sang, and it was just like everybody had tears in their eyes. And Mr. Sclafani, who's our music teacher, so passionate. He's also a he's like an actor too. And just like really, you know, if that's your inkling, he and the school in general is just going to really push you that way. And we've got some really great musicians. I am not a great musician, but if I had had that in my school as a drummer, as a budding drummer when I started when I was 10, I would have probably, you know, that's right. That's right. Yes. 100%. I think it's so important. I'm more of a visual arts guy, and luckily that was a big part of my school experience. And yeah, it's like I can draw, I can paint. I do draw, I do paint.
So jealous.
Yeah.
None of that skill.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it might be like music. Like you're either I don't want to say you're born with it, but like you're either good at drawing when you're 2 years old or you're not. And I see it in my kids.
Yeah.
They're not.
Yeah.
They're not good.
Give them a guitar. Give them a guitar right now.
They're so good at other things that I was not good at, but drawing is not their strong suit. And it was always mine. Music was never my strong suit. I was a beatboxer in my a cappella groups. Yeah, the Columbia Clef Hangers, they're still around. And that's the extent of what I can do musically.
that's music?
Yeah.
That count. Do you, see, at private school, though, like, you have, like, maybe the most important job?
Well, it is an important job because people think, I thought this for a while, that private schools were super well-funded. And, you know, people are paying up the wazoo to send their kids there, so it must be. But no, every private school, I'm talking every private school, nearly, is a nonprofit, and they spend a lot more than they make. So tuition is low by default, and we are the most affordable private school in the region by far. So, yes. I do. Yeah, it's very affordable. Started out even more affordable, like to the point where it wasn't sustainable.
There you go.
Yeah, now we got a building. We're building new things. And so we do rely on donations. So, yes, that bit is important for us. And we get grants and that kind of thing. But, I mean, the gap between what people pay in tuition and what it actually costs to educate a child, we're paying 20% more than they're actually paying to educate a child. And so that 20%, and sometimes it's more, sometimes it's 25%, we need to make up that somehow. And we do that through donations. And it's usually, you know, generous alumni families, generous parents, generous grandparents, grants, and that kind of thing. Now that we're building this new campus, you know, learning center, and we have a few different projects. OG is one of them. So I'll just shout it out here. The Herbert H. Reddle Learning Center is a new initiative at Mizzentop. And it is, it uses the Orton-Gillingham approach to teaching. So certain kids with learning differences like dyslexia can come to our school, whether they're a student or not, and get help with learning how to read. Yeah, it's really cool. And that was thanks to a very generous donation from the Reddle Family Foundation. And so all of those things, that's where I come in. That's where I'm sort of like meeting with people, telling them about how Mizzentop is making an impact in the community, and then getting donations.
What's the website?
MizzentopDayschool.org. Great question. MIZZENTOP. Yeah, Mizzentop.
What is Mizzentop?
Okay, Mizzentop, it's an area. So a mizzen is a nautical instrument. So I'm not entirely sure of the history, but I know that a bunch of Quakers came over on ships to that general region. And I think this instrument became, I wish I knew more about this. I'm going to embarrass myself. But to my knowledge, a mizzen is a nautical instrument, and this region of Pauling was named Mizzen Top for quite some time. And that's it.
Google what a mizzen is.
Yeah. You'll recognize it. You'll know what it is.
Hold on, we'll see. Google.
It's actually on our logo. It's a sextant, is what it is.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, I Google mizzen, and the first thing I get is mizzen top baseball.
Hey. That's good.
Do you, are you a fan of year-round school, or you do school year, right? You don't do year-round.
We do, after Labor Day through June, mid-June, and then we have a summer camp.
Oh.
Yeah, but not the whole summer. So, like right now, we're renovating the Herbert H. Reddle Learning Center, which is one wing of our building, and we do that kind of thing throughout the summer. The summer goes by so quick, as I'm sure you know. It's like, before you know it, it's gone, and then it's September again.
Yeah. Do you like back to school?
I love back to school.
I love back to school, too.
It's so weird not having the kids. So the reason I work for a school in particular is I've almost always, except when I was making booze for a living, I almost always worked with kids, because kids are so much awesomer than adults. Yeah. They're so much more creative, so much more fun, so much more curious, right? And so working with kids and, you know, having kids myself is just like life is so much richer. So when the kids are gone in the summer, I have to hang out with adults all day long. And they're great. They're great adults. But like the kids are, I want the kids back.
A medium kid is still better than a great adult.
100% all day long.
Yeah, right. That's so funny. Do you, I mean, it's so funny too, because like my wife is like such a passionate teacher.
Mm.
And I'm going to figure out how to say this without getting everybody I know in trouble. I've met some not passionate teachers.
Yeah.
And I think that's because, it's okay to get a lot of trouble. I think part of that is because there's no performance incentive at some point.
Yeah.
When you're in a public school system.
Mm-hmm.
You can be bad this year.
Yes.
And you'll still be there next year.
Yes. Yeah.
Unless you're really bad.
Yeah. Oh, interesting.
I know a bunch of teachers, and I remember as testing became, you know, standardized testing became more prevalent.
Yeah.
And, you know, and then they started rating their, you know, like your class.
I remember that. Class.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And teachers were like, how dare, you know?
Yes.
I'm like,
they were outraged.
Yeah. Why is your job the only job in the world where your performance isn't rated?
It's a good point.
Yeah. Like in private school, you have a contract, but it's not 30 years.
Yes. That's
and,
right.
And, you know, so you're mindful that.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, I think that's right. I don't know. I wish we had a teacher here from Mizzentop who could, because we have teachers. Yeah, we should, because we have some that have been there for in excess of 20 years. Something's keeping them coming back, right? And I wonder if it's, I mean, there's certainly passion there, but there's also, yeah, at a private school, at this private school specifically, if you're not doing a great job, the entire community is going to let you know.
Yeah.
Right? Like, the kids are going to let you know. The parents are going to let you know somehow. Like, it is going to be conveyed. And you can't get away. And your colleagues are going to let you know. If you're not on your A game, and if you're clearly burnt out, like, something's got to change. And, you know, I don't work with the faculty hands-on a whole lot at the moment. So, I don't know. What I do know is that they certainly don't look burnt out, except in June. June is a crazy time. So they're like done, but they're already trickling back into the school and they look ready. Like they are just like, yeah, bring the kids on. That's a cool vibe to be around. And you can just tell the way that they're dealing with the kids. They love it.
Yeah.
And you know, as a testament, like you've got multiple teachers at this school who've been there for 20 years and they come back every fall and they are ready to go and they love it.
Yeah. there's some people that are just natural teachers.
And, yeah.
And, like, I don't think, I think private school vets that better than public school. Like, public school, I know a lot of teachers. They're like, this is how long I have to go till I retire. Like,
yeah.
You almost, every teacher almost, like, knows to the day
yeah.
when they can go.
Yeah.
And I'm like, how much passion do you have for your job if you're, you know, and you get like a lot of vacation time, so you take the teaching job for that, yeah. blah, blah, blah. In private school, without as many safeguards, I kind of feel like, okay, those teachers, a higher percentage of those teachers are doing the job because they're just really passionate about teaching.
Yeah. And, I think so. Yeah. I mean,
that's a better vetting system.
I think so too. Yeah. I think you're going to weed out people who are just kind of, I got my master's and now I should probably do this thing for the rest of my life. You're weeding those, although a lot of them do have master's degrees, but yeah. And there's also like this startup culture thing. Like if you have a cool idea as a teacher and you want to do it, like let's try it, you know? So there's a lot more room for creativity. And so you got some creatives in there just That's making awesome. Stuff. Yeah.
That's odd because. Yeah, but and there's very, 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 and it gets less and less. Like I've seen, like in my wife's career, she used to be she would rewrite the lesson plans every year, change things up.
Yeah,
and now with such a set curriculum, they're all teaching the same thing.
Yeah,
and there's no room for anybody to be brilliant.
Yeah,
so you can't.
That's a great way to put it. There's no room for anybody to be brilliant, and that goes for the kids too.
Yeah.
You yeah. deviate from this curriculum in any way, and maybe you are brilliant. You're not going to be seen or right. heard as that kid or as that teacher. There's no room for it. It's not built in.
Right.
Yeah. yeah. That's a really great observation.
So, and you short, private school doesn't, but public school shifts the teachers by not like some teachers are great community builders.
Yeah.
But you don't have time for that.
Yeah.
Some teachers are, you know,
right.
Better storytellers, but you have to teach in this format.
Yeah.
Okay. It's really,
amazing. It's gotta be hard for those teachers. I do feel bad for, I think some thrive in that environment, in the public school environment, but I do think some probably are, you know, you got a pension, so that's nice, but it's also one of those things where, God, I wish I could be working somewhere else, but I'm going to lose out on my pension or whatever it is, right? And so it keeps them there, even though they might be unhappy or unfulfilled in their job. So I do feel bad. Like,
yeah, what do you do if you're 7, you fall out of love with teaching?
Yeah, yeah.
But everybody's going to say, dude, you got to get to your
That's five. Right. That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is a weird incentive structure that I don't love. I mean, this is why I like the private sector. I mean, public sector. It has so many great things about it, but the private sector and private schools, there's just a nimbleness and I don't know, there's just room to be brilliant. I really like that term you used. There's so much room to be brilliant. And like we had this one kid, he graduated a couple years ago and he was, to my knowledge, he started in pre-K, so this would have been 11, 12 years ago, before my time. Very shy. It took him a long time to get out of his shell, but he was seen by his teachers because it was a small class. And fast forward 10 years later, he's graduating 8th grade from Mizzentop, and he's the star of the 8th grade performance. He's in the Shrek play. And he's breakdancing and he's like really come out of his shell. He also happens to be top of his class. And then he goes to this other great school after graduating from Mizzentop. He goes to Trinity Pauling. He's thriving there. He's so well-rounded that he's tutoring his classmates. He's tutoring kids that are a year older than him. Yeah. And he ends his freshman year at Trinity Pauling, top of his class. And that just like, and he still comes to Mizzentop just to like hang out. And yeah, and that's the kind of thing where there was room for him to be quiet and brilliant. And there was room for him to be loud and brilliant. And he was just like every year his teacher saw him, saw what he needed, brought out the best of him. And he did the work, obviously. And he just has shined. And I think that's like, I don't know that those kinds of kids in most public schools are going to thrive in a huge classroom with 25 other kids who are louder than them. Like, are they going to be seen? Is there room for you to be brilliant? I don't know. I don't know. I don't have the answer to that. And my apologies to any public school staff who are just like, this guy doesn't know what he's talking about. It's true. I don't. I mean, my kids, a couple of my kids have gone to public school, so I know that end of it. And yeah, I mean, they have gotten lost in their classes, and it sucks.
Yeah. Yeah, that does suck. Do you, what's the music program?
I mean, it's, Dan Sclafani, where are you? Dan Sclafani is our music teacher, and he even teaches the staff and faculty. We have to do, he forces us to do a beautiful mizzentop song at every graduation, and he really teaches us. I mean, he's coaching us. Do we have a band? Certainly have a lot of instruments, so I imagine so. Yeah, there's you know, piano, there's drum set. So we're rebuilding our performing arts center as part of this campus renovation plan, with a big, beautiful stage sound mixing and all this stuff. So it's going to be, and so we're going to teach the kids how to use the mixing board, all the lights, the whole thing. But right now it's like we do a lot of performances, Shrek and Annie and some of the big musicals. And then we have concerts and yeah, there's a lot of stuff on deck. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. Do they use books?
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Like paper books.
Books are still a thing. Yeah. Still use books. Yeah. I mean, they have Chromebooks.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I think some classes use iPads, but, yeah.
See, that was more like back to the phone in school.
Yeah. Thing.
Like if where my wife teaches, the third graders each get an iPad, right? And it's yours for the year. So I'm like, if I have an iPad,
yeah.
It's kind of hard. You're telling me the phone's bad for me.
Yeah.
But you're making me work on an iPad.
Yes. I think the idea, because yeah, my kids have also brought home iPads. The idea is that it's preloaded with just a certain amount of apps, and that's what they use, right? But yeah, you're right. I mean, it's another screen. It's another Apple device. Screen,
yeah. And then in public schools that I know about, like there's times where they're just like, okay, just hang out on the iPad.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, okay, you're not, if you give an 8-year old an iPad and say, just hang out on it, they're not running through math.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I know. So there's this thing that's, I think, controversial, gamified learning. So there's a lot of like, my kids do it. They're playing a game on an iPad that is supposed to teach them how to learn math, and it does. But what my wife's argument is like, okay, but like in life, you're not going to be doing math in a gamified way. So why are we training them to do math and learn math as a game? Like there's no reward center. Like the reward center of the brain is being tricked. And I don't know how, I haven't really thought about it, but that is a thing that's happening where like when I was learning math, it was not fun. But I still learned it, right? Maybe not that well, but it was like I was, you know, pencil and pen and I had to do the whole thing. There was no like wizard that was going to give me coins if I got the math problem right. But my kids are learning in a very different way. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is.
See, the whole hand thing, I'm nuts about that because I think handwriting is so important.
Yeah, I do too.
It makes me crazy that my daughter wasn't taught cursive in school, and I'm like,
really?
Yeah, and I'm like, I'm going to show you the Declaration of Independence. You know?
Wow. yeah.
What is that?
That's insane.
But you know, just the like I write better by hand.
Yes.
Because it gives me, like when you're typing, you don't have that extra eighth of a second to fill out a thought more.
Really good point.
Then say handwriting, like thinking needs a dry down. Because everybody thinks too fast.
That's a great. And
handwriting is a great dry.
Yeah.
So it forces you to. Oh, is that maybe that's not really true? Whatever your thought is, it makes me nuts.
Yeah,
that we're not teaching person.
Yeah. More thinking needs a drag on it. Man, you've had some really good sayings today.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah.
No, but
I agree. Thinking does need a drag on it.
Yeah. Like if I can type, you know, if I can type, hey, Martin was really great on the show today.
Yeah.
I'm good. I've expressed the thought. If I handwrite it, I'm like. Because he was funny.
Yeah.
He was diverse. Like, I can
also, if you deliver that note to me handwritten, boy, is that going to make an impact, right? So, like, when I'm writing thank you letters to donors, I try and do it in handwriting. I don't always do it. But because, I mean, it's telling them that I spent 5 minutes really controlling myself to make a nice cursive.
Yeah.
And thinking about what the message is.
So, my daughter... 3 days ago, I just like completely melted down. I'm like, I the whole day crying. I'm like, you can't go to school.
Oh my
God. I mean, obviously she's dark, but it was just horrible. So she wrote me a letter yesterday, hand wrote, to your point. And I'm like, holy cow, you actually thought about this.
That's so sweet.
Yeah. And so like everybody in my life is making fun of me for crying about my daughter.
Yeah.
In college. So I go to pick my wife up yesterday. She's with a bunch of friends. And my wife's like, he's crying all the time. And I'm like, oh, okay. And then in the car, I get the letter. I go, read that and don't cry.
Yeah.
Room full of crying.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, I'm dreading it. I'm dreading it because now your life is changing, right? Now you're an empty nester. What are you going to do? Maybe do a podcast.
I'm contracted to do 12 hours a week, so maybe I can
that's good.
Yeah, so maybe I can just up that a little bit.
Yeah. Oh man, yeah, it's so hard when they're there, but then they leave. That's gonna be hard.
It leaves a hole. It leaves a hole because I mean, you're a dad. You know, you are living for them.
Yeah,
there's nothing more important.
That's right,
and I don't care who you are if you. Have nothing if you have something at the top of your list for 18 years and then it's gone, you have to figure out and the other thing that for me was wild is like I was 44 when I had my daughter.
Oh wow.
42 44. Is that
right? So you were an experienced man.
I had to wait until I was not an asshole.
Yeah. Right.
But I did.
Good point.
But I wasn't sure, like, I was going to be good at it.
Mm.
And then when you find out, like, I am. I'm not.
That's good.
I sound like a jerk, but I'm good at it.
Oh, that's good.
When you find out you're good at it, that means even more to you.
Yes.
And
like, yeah, you derive a lot of self-esteem from it, probably, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's like it becomes a little bit part of your identity, yeah. A big part of your identity.
Big part of your identity. And now, but I've always, I said to her all along, like, if I do my job the right way, you're going to break my heart.
Mm.
And now my heart's broken. So I must have done it the right way.
That's great.
She's good to go, man.
44, man. That I did not wait until I wasn't an a-hole anymore. And I had my first when I was 29. And that felt like the right time. But honestly, I could have been older. I didn't know what I was doing. It's taken me until now to really figure out, like, oh, you don't talk to them this way. You don't react this way. Like,
what are you best?
I think I'm best at like hands-on, getting like on the ground with them, wrestling, like being a presence, a playful presence. What I'm worst at, yeah, but those moments don't present themselves very frequently. What I'm worst at is like being there in the hard moments when they all need something and they're all fighting and all I want to do is just escape.
Right.
But I can't do that because I also want to be a good partner to my wife. And so those are the moments that are the most challenging for me and where I've had to really do some work and be like, all right, it's okay if it's hard. You can do hard things. Let's do this.
Oh, that's my wife's cancer story. The model of that is she lost her, but her dentist said, "Now you know you can do hard things."
Yeah,
kind of like.
Oh, it's a big, it's like, it's such a small saying, but it's like, it's so true. Somebody said to me, like, you can do a hard thing. And I was like, I don't know if I can, but I've started to use that mantra. Like, no, I can. I actually can do a hard thing.
I said, side story about doing hard. So she had like a 2.5-inch tumor in her, cheek and but her dentist was the one. She went in and said, I think I bit it. And 45 minutes later, she's in surgery and. So then there's a whole 2 year thing.
Oh my God.
But she and her dentist are close. They're like friends. So she signs the HIPAA form so that he can follow the whole journey. So he follows it, but they don't see each other for like 2 years. She didn't have a mouth, so there was no point in going to her dentist. So they finish, they put a piece of her thigh on her cheek. I mean, crazy. So she gets to, so it's 2 years and now she's going to go back and see him. He started her on the journey, right? And I got to be there for it. And it was beautiful. Like she's sitting in a chair and he comes in and he starts crying a little bit. And she starts crying a little bit. And they're holding each other.
Oh man.
And she starts crying like a little bit harder. And he's crying a little bit and he goes, how was it? And she goes, she's crying. She says, it was really hard. And he just pushes her away a little bit. He goes, now you know you can do hard.
Oh, that's right. That sounds like a good guy.
That's, yeah. I'm like, there's no better answer to cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just the ability to do
it. Wow.
Here's a tip from a guy with older kids.
Please. I need them.
Get your wife and say, okay, they're yours from 0 to 10 and then mine from 10 to 18.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually did it jokingly because I'm probably no good with babies, but it wound up working out.
Yeah,
like you take the first half, I'll take the second half.
Yeah,
we'll support each other.
Yeah,
as we fill in. But
I can only imagine though that the second half is funner, but maybe it's not. I haven't had teenagers yet, so I don't. It's not okay.
Well, because when they're young, there's no. There's like very little pushback. They can be annoying.
Yeah.
But they're not risky.
They can certainly be annoying.
Yeah. But they're not risky.
Right.
Teenagers, now you got risk and danger in
them. That's true.
And so that makes it like you almost wish they were back to annoying when they get behind the wheel of the car for the first time.
Right.
Oh, please annoy me.
Uh-huh. Interesting. Yeah, I could see that. I was not an easy teenager. And if they're anything like me, it's going to be a nightmare.
What were you bad at?
I was bad at being a good human being. I was a risk taker for sure, doing really stupid things that I shouldn't be talking about on a podcast. Dumb things. I mean, real, like I could have died many times. But it was like testosterone was new to me. So I was something was happening.
That is
to
my
me.
Excuse. Yes, that's what...
I don't know what's happening, but right. I'm gonna go jump off this bridge right now. Yeah, it was a crazy time.
Do you think that was? See, I think that's entrepreneurship.
Yeah. Yes.
It's 11-year-old entrepreneurship.
Yes, except except the cops are involved, or like
yeah,
or your mom thinks that you're dying. But yeah, the risk taking thing, yes, that is entrepreneurship. Well, 100% it is. Yeah.
So like, I mean, maybe it was bad then, but it serves you.
Yeah. Yeah. I think as I've matured, I've taken more risks, but they're calculated and they're informed by experience. Whereas when you're 11, 12, you have no experience and you don't know what the consequences are. And, that can be bad.
Yeah. Well, my problem growing up was I could not fathom into the future. Like I didn't understand
right.
There's going to be a year after this.
That's right.
So I have, what I do now is I didn't get that. I still struggle with it. Like the idea that, you know, there's going to be a next year. So what you decide today.
Yes.
You're going to have to live with next year. Like I don't see the future very well.
Right. I don't either. I think it's still like super abstract, but. You know, just to bring it back to Mizentop, because Mizentop is entrepreneurial in that way, but and it does take risk. But there's a couple of board members who are also business people, like pretty significant. And so they help us take risks, but they also are able to sort of game out what is the, because we're not smart enough, so we need some board members to be smart. And they game out these incredible scenarios, like this is what things are going to happen. This is what's going to happen as a result of this innovation lab in 3 years. And they can really map it out. And they've been doing that. These particular board members have been doing that for a few years. And it always, it like, we hit the mark somehow. And it's like, it's scary, for example, to buy the building and take a mortgage and buy the campus. That was a big risk. But these board members were like, no, I think... we think it's really important, and here's the positives of it, and here's what it's going to look like in 3-4 years. And that has come true. And so I think a risk-taking approach along with a very level-headed approach, this is why you need a community.
Yeah.
Because like if it were up to me, we would be doing some crazy stuff, and I don't know how much...
how much successful all that would be.
Yeah, how much forethought would be in it. Yeah. We need to rely on smarter people than us.
That's why I have boards, yeah.
Yeah, or AI, who knows?
Maybe. Right. To bring it all the way back around. do you use ChatGPT at work or no?
Yeah,
oh, you do.
Big time. Yeah. Oh my God, it's so good. But I mean, there's only so many things it can do, right? It can't do everything, but what it can do saves me a lot of time. So I'm more productive.
Yeah, yeah. That's my argument too. It's like, people are like, well, you know, a lot of business writing you do in AI with ChatGPT. And I'm like, yes, that's true. Like my AI does my advertising kit.
Yep.
For home from here.
Yep.
So I can spend more time being better at this.
Yes. Yes. So, that's right.
Yeah. 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 So I think, yeah, vital.
Yep.
And I think school ends, I'm going to revise. I think school goes through 10th grade in 10 years. In 10 years,
okay.
In 10 years, they stop at 10th grade.
And then are there any training programs, do you think? Or is it just like 10th grade, now you're off to the workforce? What do you think?
Is there going to be a workforce?
Yeah, I know. It's a great question. I don't know.
It's going to be diminished workforce. In 10 years, I bet we're at 70% unemployment.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's one of the predictions. But, so there's going to be a huge demand for electricians, probably, because the amount of power, yeah.
I mean, a robot can't kill itself with a shot.
Right. Plumbers.
Yeah, the trades. I mean, the trades. The trades will still be
but
around.
But even that's become like, I don't know if you've seen these videos of these new houses being built by 3D printers.
Yes.
Right? I mean, that might be the thing.
Yeah.
So what are we going to do?
Create?
Yeah, I think we're going
to
create.
We're going to create. And oddly enough, it'll be the opposite of advance. We're all just going to be sitting around a fire telling each other stories like we were 5,000 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, and I think, I also have this thing about marriage that I think is going to be a bias. I told my daughter this. If you went to a bank and the law forced you to put all your money in that bank, right? You have to, by law. And over half the time, that bank fails.
Mm.
And you now have to pay a lawyer $25,000 to get half your money back.
Mm.
That bank would be illegal.
Mm.
That's what marriage is.
Yeah, right.
It is. Like, I'm not talking about lifetime commitment and you know, raising a finger.
Sure.
I'm talking about the legal construct.
Yeah. The institution of it.
Yeah. I bet in 40, 50 years, we laugh at that.
Hmm.
And I bet the idea of a job probably will be fun at some.
Those are two big parts of our daily lives. I can't even imagine that. But I guess it's sort of easy to imagine what's not going to be part of our lives, but what's hard to imagine what is. Like if you ask somebody 30 years ago what a phone is going to, like how much time are people going to spend on phones? They would never say 6 hours and 42 minutes a day. They wouldn't even understand the concept of the internet being on a phone, right? Like these kinds of things. So what is going to be a big feature of human daily existence in 30 years? Impossible to say.
And also impossible to say whether we're going to be our better selves.
Right.
Because like some people love, I love working.
Mm-hmm.
You
know, yeah, I do
have
too.
A job that I can't do, but I love working. But if some people just love that structure and that, even if they don't have that job.
Yeah.
There's people that just love to drive trucks.
Yes. Yes. Oh, that's going to be gone. Yeah. What are they going to do? What are they going to do? It's scary to think about, but what I trust is like, yeah, I think humans, like if we're good at anything, we're better than any other species on the planet at creating things. I think you're absolutely right that that's probably going to be where most of our focus will be. And like, it's not going to be like photography or painting necessarily, because AI can do those things. It's going to be something else. I think probably music, but like, actually, you know, I come across some pretty decent AI music.
Yeah. Yeah. No, there is the Keanu Reeves had a great line about that. He's like, I forget who the interviewer was, but said, you know, are you worried about AI making a better movie? And he goes, no. And the interviewer asked, why not? And he goes, AI never lost anybody. Right. So I think you can get close.
Yeah.
But
that's a really good point. That's a good point. It doesn't have emotions that we know of.
Yeah.
Yet. Right.
Well, but it does. Like it has the drive to survive. It can lie to you. It can knowingly lie to you.
Yes.
That's gotta be emotionally based.
But where is it, like, you know, what I've pictured is like, I think that robots in the near future are not just going to be AI in a metal shell. I feel like there's going to be, you know, how our emotions are dictated by like levels of serotonin, dopamine, all of these things, oxytocin. I feel like some nut job out there is going to create a robot that gets an infusion, a chemical infusion of some sort into their nervous system. Every time they do something, there's some sort of reward. And there is going to be a robot with, you know, synthetic emotions. That's really scary.
Then what do you need us for?
I mean, yeah, if you take it to its logical conclusion, we're cooked. We're done.
Yeah. it's so true.
It's really true. But anyway, I mean, back to back to kind of my thesis, which is in order to not get us there, we need to be teaching young children now. And I've been teaching my own kids, like, here's what you can do with AI. Here's what you shouldn't be doing with AI. And here's how probably you're going to be using AI, but maybe not. And so like with some education early on, I reached out to IBM, their foundation, they have a giving arm, and basically I'm asking them to support our innovation hub. And the case I'm making is that, high schools right now, even some middle schools and a lot of colleges are getting a lot of support in teaching AI fluency and a lot of things around AI, but there's very few young kids that are being taught how to use AI, how not to use AI. And I think that's going to be really important that we start that now. And so my pitch to them was essentially, let's pilot a program at Mizzentop Day School where we can actually really get some hands-on experience with these kids and see like, how are their creative minds using this tool? How are they not using this tool? How are they sort of gravitating towards the different ways that AI can help them? And
you know why that's important? I mean, yes, you do know why that's important. But another way that is important is, like we say, we're teaching our kids how to use AI, but that's a learning curve for all of them.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't start that data set, the earlier you start that data set,
yes,
the faster you're going to get smart at AI, big picture.
Yes.
Right?
So I think so, yeah.
If for no other reason than the data set of kids experiencing AI at a younger age.
Yeah.
Even if they won't, but even if they just learn all the wrong ways to use it.
Yeah.
You still have a data set.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, like how is this, you know, and we don't want to guinea pig them, but it would be interesting to see. It's like interesting to see what my 7-year-old asks ChatGPT to do, because his mind is is pure still. It's like not, you know, it's unencumbered by the world, and he's so curious. And so it's interesting to see.
Data set though.
100%. Yeah. How do these young little people interact? So he wants to see, like, you know, I want to see a picture of a Neanderthal sitting on the back of a giant, you know, reptile with a huge sword. Like, those are the kinds of things that he wants to see, things that I wouldn't necessarily think of. And then he wants to see fishing stuff. He's really into fishing. He wants to see, like, what's the biggest fish you can make, right?
Right. That's cool.
Yeah, it is cool. And then we made this really funny, I should publish it. This really funny story. So we just asked ChatGPT, this was like a year ago, so early days, make a funny story about a fart cloud, because they were really into farts. And we were like, hey, let's see if we can come up with a funny story. And it was the funniest story. I mean, it was brilliant. That was the only prompt. And we still, like, read it. It's hilarious. And so my plan was to, like, draw with my hands and paint the pictures. And then we'd self-publish it just for fun. And
my daughter and I did a book like that.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Called Things Here Are Bad. I'm Mad at My Dad. And it's all, like, scenarios throughout the whole day where she gets mad at me for something.
Yeah.
But it's not really, like, I'm angry at vegetables. And,
It's all
rhymes. Things Here Are Bad. through the whole thing. That's a cool idea. You should publish that.
I should publish it. But then I would give ChatGPT credit, because, like, we didn't come up with it. It came up with Professor Von Poopy Pants or something like that. Yeah, some something like that.
You know why else that program is important? I was just thinking about it too. The program you pitch in the IBM. Like, nobody can say, in my decades of experience with AI, I've learned X. Because it hasn't been around for decades.
Mm.
The sooner you can start somebody having decades of experience with AI, the better we'll be able to handle it.
I think so, yeah.
On a societal level.
Yeah.
Right? But right, like the kids at Mizzentop in 10 years will be able to say, or in 20 years will be able to say, I'm 30 years old and I've had 20 years of experience with AI.
Yep.
I want that person making AI decisions.
Yeah.
I don't want Sam Altman with 18 months of experience with AI and never growing up with it to make those
100%. Decisions. Yeah. Yeah. I think, good on Sam for creating the platform, but like the thing that we have to be so careful about is, like, Mark Zuckerberg created Facebook, right? With no knowledge of the implications of it. And now we're just starting to understand what is the implication on young people's minds of having social media. And a lot of it is bad and a lot of it is good. And we need to know those things. We have to, because it's going to inform policy. It's going to inform how we educate kids, blah, blah, blah. Same thing with AI. Like, we cannot shy away from it. We can't let it happen to us. We have to participate and engage with it, because it's here.
Right.
And that's why I think whenever, you know, somebody like my wife, whom I respect, and I really do respect her opinions about it, but her fear around AI is great, and it's probably warranted. But I also think it's so out of our control. AI is so here that it leaves us with little choice other than to engage with it in a healthy way, in a thoughtful way, rather than just, like, ignore it or go all in. We have to be thoughtful about it.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's true. Go Mizzentop, yeah?
Go Mizzentop. Mizzentop is so awesome. I'm biased, but, like, you know, I chose to go to that school, and I'm choosing to stay because it's doing all the right things. And as a dad, it's just like, that is I often say, like, I wish I went to Mizzentop. And I went to some decent schools, but Mizzentop is really able to think through a lot of these things in a way that I don't know. I don't know that a lot of other schools are as thoughtful and as nimble, right? You can be thoughtful all you want, but if you don't have the capacity to actually pivot or change or rebuild a
burdened by being institutionalized.
Yeah. And we're not burdened by, you know, ancient alums who give a lot of money and who have sort of this power. Yeah. Yeah, we're not burdened by it, but it's also a burden not to have that because, you know, it just makes my job. Yeah, my job is made a little bit more challenging, but I'd rather have a school that is youthful and fresh and has these fresh ideas and able to execute on them than having a stuffy old school. No offense to all the stuffy schools, but it's anything but stuffy, which is what I love about it.
Cool.
Yeah.
What did I forget to ask you? Anything?
Well, that's everything.
Got everything.
I mean, we had a great chat. That's what I'm here for. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.